Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantara Shima Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Goprem Anandi. Okay, so tonight we'll continue with chapter 17, verses 1 to 12. Tomorrow night's the closed book exam. And your open book exams and oral presentations also during tomorrow night. So then, what is chapter 17 called?
The history of
Kaliya. History of Kaliya. Mm-hmm. So chapter 16 was Krishna chastises Kaliya. So now we hear a little bit about the background information about who Kaliya was and how this pastime took place, how Kaliya ended up in the Jamuna River. Having thus heard how Lord Krishna chastised Kaliya, King Parikshit inquired, why did Kaliya leave Ramanaka Island, the abode of the serpents, and why did Garuda become so antagonistic toward him alone? Jagannath Aishwarya. Shukadev Goswami said, to avoid being eaten by Garuda, the serpents had previously made an arrangement with him whereby they would meet, they would each make a monthly offering of tribute at the house of a tree, at the base of a tree. Thus, every month on schedule, O mighty arm, King Parikshit, each serpent would duly make his offering to that powerful carrier of Vishnu as a purchase of protection.
Srila Sridhar Swami has given an alternate explanation of this verse. Upahare may also be translated as by those who are to be eaten, and Sarpajani as those human beings who are dominated by or who belong to the serpent race. According to this reading, a group of human beings had fallen under the control of the serpent and were prone to be eaten by them. To avoid this, the human beings would make a monthly offering to the serpent, who in turn would offer a portion of that offering to Garuda so that he would not eat them. The particular translation given above is based on the commentary of Srila Sanatan Goswami and the translation by Srila Prabhupada in his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In any case, all the acharyas agree that the serpents purchased protection from Garuda.
Any points there?
I have been told a few months ago that two devotees in a special lineage in many pastimes, they only eat meat, the one in Garuda, one is Lord Bhima, means of Bhima. And further the devotee was telling me that we should not inquire it, we should not discuss it more than that, or creating of it.
Well, he's half bird, so it's his natural food. So he's in that particular body. So Bhima Sain wasn't eating like meat all the time. It wasn't like every day he's sitting there eating meat. It's like occasionally he would kill a tiger or something, and then after killing the tiger, then he would eat the meat and like that. But it wasn't like. It wasn't like he was eating meat every day or like that.
But is it true that we shouldn't be discussing about that? Because we're creating offense.
I never heard of it. I mean, this is permitted. Bhima's allowed to eat meat. Kshatriya Dharma. Kshatriya's allowed to have illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating to some degree. You know, they do the gambling, the Kshatriya. You know? And illicit sex means they get married. But then they have all the maid servants, so they're impregnating the maid servants as well. They're not married to them. They're allowed to do that. And then they maintain them in the house. Like Vidura was like that. He was like, you know. So illicit sex, gambling, intoxication. They're allowed to drink sometimes. Not like every day they're drinking. It's sometimes a big event. There's some alcohol, some milk drinking like that. But not like all the time. And then, what's the other one?
Meat eating.
Yeah, so. So they kill a tiger or something, and they'll take the meat. It's not like wholesome. It's limited. The other three varnas are not allowed to under any circumstance, but Kshatriya, under special circumstance, he can have some. It's dharma, it's allowed. And Kshatriya is very passionate. So they're allowed to have some extra leniency like that. But even though, Prabhupada says that, even though they're allowed to eat meat, Yudhishthira, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadev, they never touched it. They're allowed to, but they never did it. But Bhima, he's just so powerful, sometimes he would just eat the tiger or something. It says if you eat the tiger, then his strength goes into your body. That's why people eat meat. Because when they eat meat, it makes your body like, you take like the animal's strength into the body. That's why they do it. But not recommended. But I've never heard this, some offense. And Garuda is a bird. So the birds, they eat eagles. They eat those flesh, fish and snakes. That's what the eagle eats. So there's no offense. He's half bird. So it's just some particular thing. And then even in Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's some comment by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur in his purport. He says in Jagannath Puri, the people who live in Puri, everyone eats fish. Nearly everyone, practically.
Even the Pandavas.
Some. Yeah, some. And
Bengali
Pandavas. Yeah, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that the residents of the heavenly planets see the residents of Jagannath Puri with forearms. And he also says that if they eat fish, there's no reaction. It says that. So, sometimes these things are overlapping or something like that. The demigods, when they look at Jagannath Puri, they see all the people there have forearms, which means it's a very powerful place. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says they eat the fish and there's no reaction. The devotees don't do it. We don't do it. But like if you go to Bengal, in Bengal, 97% of the population eat fish or chicken. It's very, very common. Like that. But devotees, we don't do that. But it's very common. Yeah, people are speculating. We don't do it. We don't. Any other point? So, in the Vedas it is said, jiva jivasya jivanam. What does this mean? Jiva jivasya jivanam. It means that every living entity is food for another living entity. So we maintain our body by taking life. Jiva means the prana of another living entity. Otherwise, we can't live. I just had some prasadam just before, so. Wheat, you have to kill the wheat. Or the carrots, you have to kill the carrots. So we're taking life to sustain our life. So it is there. So they had to, every month, they would get some offering and give to Garuda. And Garuda would take, it was like a deal. And Garuda said, okay, if you give me some offering, give me some snakes and like that, then I won't come and kill everyone. Like that. So they said, okay, so we'll give some offering like that. And then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says also, it's described there were human beings living there on Ramanaka. Ramanaka means Fiji. There's no snakes there, so Garuda must have eaten them all. They're all gone. Fiji doesn't have snakes. There's sea snakes there, actually. In the sea, in the ocean, there's snakes. On the land, I've heard there's no snake. But There's human beings living there, and they also had a deal with Garuda. So the Garuda would not come and eat them. Then they would put the snakes and make some offering like that to Garuda. So something was there, some like system. Like that. He's very powerful. He eats the fish and he eats the snakes. So he would go down there and he would take them whenever he wanted. So they tried to control the situation. There was some, if you read the Mahabharata, there was one Rakshasa. What was the name of the Rakshasa? Was it Baka or was it Hidimba? Baka was it?
Every month.
Yeah. So every month he would come Bakasura. And Bhima went and killed him because he was every month he'd come and take someone from the village. So I said, okay, once a month you bring one person and be Bhikkhara food, I will eat the person and the food, and then I won't kill anyone else in the village. So it's like some deal that they're making. But then Bhima was eating the Bhikkhara food when he got there, and Baka came up from behind and hit him on the back as hard as he could, and Bhima didn't even move. And Bhima just turned around and grabbed him by the throat, and then with his other hand he just kept eating. And when he's finished, he wiped his mouth and he went bang, and then he hit him. Then started to fight him. And he killed him. Bhima was very, very powerful. Garuda was also super powerful. Any points? Although all the other serpents were dutifully making offerings to Garuda, one serpent, the arrogant Kaliya, son of Kadru, would eat all these offerings before Garuda could claim them. Thus, Kaliya directly defied the carrier of Lord Vishnu. So, the reoccurring theme in the Bhagavatam, and it's a reoccurring theme now in this pastime, is don't offend the devotees. Don't commit aparad. Because if you offend the devotees, everything becomes finished. So why do we offend the devotees? Why do we commit the offense? What do you think, Meenakshi? Yeah, okay, unintentionally. Why do people intentionally offend the devotees? What's their cause?
Envious.
Yeah, envy. So Kaliya is envious of Garuda. So he's envious, so he commits an offense. So sometimes we become envious, and then we offend someone who's superior to us. Because we think we are superior. So it's a deep-rooted consciousness. Why we came to the material world. Because we were envious of Krishna. And you're envious of other devotees. So sometimes, even though they're superior, but then you will still commit some offense. So Garuda, Kaliya is like that. Commits some offense to Garuda, which is very foolish. Because Kaliya is extremely powerful. He's extremely powerful, but Garuda is almost unlimitedly powerful. You know, God himself rides on his back. Now, Garuda's power is almost beyond estimation. You know, Garuda, Hanuman, these kind of personalities. So powerful, it's almost inestimable how powerful they are. In the past time where Garuda says, I will swallow the ocean. So, I mean, you know, look at the ocean. You know, he was serious. He said, I will swallow it. And that's how powerful he is. He can just rip the whole thing. Oh, Lord Shiva. You know, Lord Shiva is so powerful. He can do things like this. There's even a pastime where the sun god Surya, the sun god is incredibly powerful himself. Incredibly powerful. And Lord Shiva becomes angry with him and the sun god starts running. That's how powerful it is. So Kaliya, he was very powerful. But then when Garuda became angry, then he ran to the Jamuna, or swam to the Jamuna, and then just hid down deep, found somewhere to hide. But if he hadn't been nice to Garuda, there wouldn't have been a problem. Because his attitude wasn't right, then Garuda said, okay, not that. So, it's Leela Mai, setting a record. It was one of the girls. O King, the greatly powerful Garuda, who is very dear to the Supreme Lord, became angry when he heard of this. Desiring to kill Kaliya, he rushed toward the serpent with tremendous speed. Priya Chaitanya, would you like to read the purport? You want to read the purport? Nila Gopi, you like to read?
Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that the word Mahavira indicates that the great speed of Garuda cannot be checked by anyone.
So what are the points in this purport? Yeah, Vega. So it means very swift or incredibly fast. Maha Vega means like incredibly fast. Krishna is known as the fastest of all. What is the fastest speed of all the speeds? Yeah, in this world mind. We say light, yeah, but faster than light is mind. So Krishna is that fast. Krishna is fast as the mind. Mind is like already there. So you go somewhere and then Krishna is already there. Just like when Hiranyaksha was fighting with Varahadev. And he went to grab him. Like that. And then when he went like that, he was outside of his arms. So like the speed of the mind is just already there. So Garuda is maybe not quite as fast as the Lord, but he's incredibly powerful. So he swiftly just came down to attack him. You have to be very powerful to ward off this kind of attack or enemy. You'll see that Arjuna in Mahabharata, the Pandavas, when they go into exile, and they're walking down one evening, they're walking down to a river. And there's one Gandhava taking bath in the river. What's his name? Is it Chitrarata, maybe? So they became friends. So then he fired arrows at Arjuna because he's walking down to the river at night time. So he got the arrows. He shot the arrows. And Arjuna was carrying a torch, like a piece of wood with some fire on the end. And the arrows were coming like, you know, when someone shoots an arrow at you, you don't have time to react. And Arjuna with the torch, he just went, knocked the arrow and kept shooting arrows at him, just went like this. And when he saw how powerful Arjuna was, then he said, okay, who are you? And he said, you must be Arjuna. He said, yes, I'm Arjuna. And then they became friends. So Garuda is so powerful. You know, when the eagle swoops, just like at the farm today, I saw the eagle flying around. So when he swoops down at you, unless you're very powerful, you can't do a lot about it when he goes like this. So Kaliya is very powerful, but when Garuda comes and attacks him, then he went to the Jamuna to take shelter. As Garuda swiftly fell upon him, Kaliya, who had the weapon of poison, raised his numerous heads to counter-attack. Showing his ferocious tongues and expanding his horrible eyes, Kaliya then bit Garuda with the weapons of his fangs. SKC, you like to read that?
The attorneys explained that Kaliya used his weapon of poison at a distance by spitting venom on his enemy, and it short rain for fighting him with his terrible fangs.
So what are the points there? So the cobras, the snakes, sometimes they can spit the venom. They spit it and they try to get in the eye. And then your eyes burn and then they come like, they can bite you. So Kaliya was doing like that. He was spitting. So it would have been a wonderful fight to watch. When we're kids, and sometimes you're at school, there's a fight in the schoolyard. I don't know what happens in India. Yeah, it happens. Yeah, and now, when we were kids, you know, sometimes the two kids start fighting, so the whole school would run. We'd just stand there. And I had one teacher, Miss Clark, she used to just let the fight go. She didn't stop it. Just like, let them fight. Work it out. So, this would have been amazing. When Kaliya, a multiple-headed snake, and Garuda, the king of the birds, very powerful fight. So hopefully one day they'll make all the movies, like good movies, like big budget movies. If they make this, it'll be very amazing. They can make amazing, you know, fights. Because if you read Mahabharata, two-thirds of Mahabharata is just the battle. Just the 18 days. You know, this happened on day one, this happened on day two, this happened on day three. It just goes on and on and on. You know, unless you have some Kshatriya blood, you can't enjoy this. So if they ever make a movie, yeah, they can make a movie. It could go on for episodes, go on for hours. You know, every day could be like 3 hours. Just the whole battle. And the whole, yeah, it'd be fantastic.
It'll be a big budget. It'll be a very big budget.
Yeah. Big budget. But they can do it easily, they do it. I mean, I hope they do it one day, because it'd be good to see. The angry son of Taksha moved with overwhelming speed in repelling Kaliya's attack. The terribly powerful carrier of Lord Madhusudana struck the son of Kadru with his left wing, which shone like gold. Beaten by Garuda's wing, Kaliya was extremely distraught, and thus he took shelter of a lake adjoining the river Jamuna. Garuda could not enter this lake. Indeed, he could not even approach it. In that very lake, Garuda had once desired to eat a fish, fish being after all his normal food. Although forbidden by the sage Salbari, who was meditating there within the water, Garuda took courage and, feeling hungry, seized the fish.
Should we take that before? Sukadeva Goswami is now explaining why Garuda could not approach the lake in the Yamuna River. It is the nature of birds to eat fish, and thus, by the arrangement of the Lord, the great bird Garuda does not commit any offense by nourishing himself with fish. Forbidding a much greater personality to eat his normal food did constitute an offense. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sabari committed two offenses. First, he dared to give an order to a supremely exalted soul like Garuda, and second, he obstructed Garuda from satisfying his desire.
So, what are the points in the purport? So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and the commentators, Prabhupada's disciples, they mention two points. One is Sabari had cursed Garuda. And the second point is that because of cursing him, he committed a great offense. So then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, he points out further that we have to be very careful about offending superior personalities. So someone's a superior devotee, you have to be very careful. This is mentioned in the third canto in the pastime of Vidura and Maitreya. When Vidura first approaches who? He's traveling around, and who does he first?
Uddhava.
But Uddhava is younger than Maitreya, although he's more advanced. But out of etiquette, then, even though he's more advanced, he said, better you go and listen to Maitreya. Learn from him, because he is the senior person. So that's etiquette. But Uddhava is more advanced. He was with Krishna the whole time. Maitreya was just like a sage who heard the conversation. But Vidura, I mean, Krishna was sitting opposite Uddhava, and Maitreya was on the side just listening. So Uddhava was much more exalted. But he's showing us etiquette. So Prabhupada points out, sometimes when a senior devotee is preaching, we should not speak. You know, a senior devotee is giving some explanation, you can't just say, start. And sometimes I've seen devotees do that. Some senior devotees there, and then the junior devotee starts like explaining everything and doing the whole thing. And everyone's just looking at the person, trying to give them the, connotation or what's the word? Indication, yeah, please be quiet. But some people, they don't pick it up. I've seen a devotee do that. Some senior devotee is there, and everyone's giving the indication. But they don't pick it up, they just keep going. Unless the senior devotee asks you to speak, then okay, then you can preach. Sometimes Prabhupada, he would ask the disciple to give the class, and Prabhupada would be sitting there listening to the disciple speak. And sometimes Prabhupada would correct. He would say, where does it say that? If the senior devotee gives permission, instruction, then you do it. Otherwise, you don't do it. Hari Sori Prabhu said he was on the plane with Prabhupada, and they were flying, and Prabhupada's sitting there, and Hari Sori Prabhu was here, and then there's one gentleman here, and he was asking Hari Sori Prabhu questions about, Hari, because they're dressed like devotees, Prabhupada's there, and Hari Sori Prabhu. So he's saying, what about this, what about that, and Hari Sori Prabhu was preaching to him. But then he realized, he thought, oh, wait a minute, Prabhupada's listening. Prabhupada's right there. Then he became very like, oh, because Prabhupada's there. And then the man, he looked at Prabhupada, and he said, he preaches very nicely. Like that. And Prabhupada nodded, he said, he preaches. He said, very nice. Prabhupada was listening. So Prabhupada was, okay, you preach, no problem. But, the etiquette is, you don't just start preaching in front of the guru or the senior devotee. So some etiquette. So we have to be careful. We have to be careful about offending any devotee. But especially, you have to be very careful about offending the very senior devotee, the advanced devotee. Etiquette has to be followed. Any point? And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he says that sometimes, it's written somewhere that you can't always understand the mind of the great Vaishnava. In other words, they may act in a particular way, but you don't understand what's going on in their mind. And sometimes it may appear to us that the senior person is acting in a way that we cannot understand. But we should not criticize, that's the point. Sometimes maybe you can't understand something. I remember one time I was in France with my Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So it says in the Shastra, when you go to the latrine, you take your Brahmin thread, you wrap it around your ear. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj came out of the bathroom, and I was there, and one of my God brothers, he was there. We're young devotees. He's like senior devotee guru. So he came out, and then on the way to wash his hand, he like took the string off. Now, according to the Shastra, you don't take it off until you washed your hand. But he like took it off. So then later, then Tamal Krishna Maharaj went into the room, and my God brother said, "Oh, did you see that? He took it off, and like that." And I was a young devotee, so I didn't know. But I just said, "Well, he's my guru, so." Takes it off, leaves it on. That's not really my business. doesn't really change anything for me. It's like, you know, my life hasn't changed. He's my guru, I'll serve him lunch. Lunch is coming, I'll serve lunch. You know, and what are you going to say? But my godbrother, he was also a young devotee at the time. He was very, oh no, this is not correct, this is not correct. Yeah. So how do you understand what's going on in the mind of the higher devotee? Another time I was with Tamokrish Maharaj in Oxford, in England. So we're offering the Dhammadhara Ashtika, the deep. Because in Kartik Mass, we offer the deep. So my godbrother, you know, he was like, you know, putting out like the, you know, take, you know, when you come to take the candle, you do Archman. It's like, come on, Tamokrish Maharaj. He just goes, don't worry. He just picked up the candle and just, you know, started offering. Like that. He said, you know, whatever, he just did like that. So you can't understand what's going on in the mind of the higher Vaishnava. You know, how do we know how exalted they are or what their relationship with Krishna is? Even Sanatana Goswami, he was in Vrindavan and he saw Krishna. And you could see Krishna. Sanatana Goswami was so advanced he could see Krishna. So Krishna would come every day and play with his friends and then run off like that. And there's one old Mataji. And she was cooking khichdi for Krishna. And she had the neem, what do they call the stick when they press the tip? What's it called? Yeah, but what's it called in Sanskrit? Dhatu or something?
Dhatun.
Dhatun. Yeah, so she had the neem Dhatun. So she's going like that, and then she'd take it and then put it in the khichdi and go. And then put it in the khichdi and go like that. So Krishna himself, run in, playing, run out, run in. And then after he'd say, hey, Krishna, come in. And then serve some khichdi, and Krishna's sitting there eating the khichdi, right? So Krishna finished the khichdi, and then, you know, watch him run off with his friends. So Sanatana Goswami come over to the Mataji. He said, Mataji, please, you're cooking for Krishna. Don't do like this. You know, this is not good. So then Krishna comes in the dream to Sanatana Goswami and said, hey, leave her alone. she wants to go like that, right? You don't say anything. She does like that, you know, that's my offering, you know. And if my devotee is offering like that, then I will take like that. So how do we know what's between Krishna and her? That's Sanatana Goswami, you know, I mean, he's, you know, he's the highest, highest. Sanatana Goswami is Lavanga Manjari in the spiritual world. He's like high, high, high devotee. But still Krishna said, hey, so sometimes you'll see the advanced devotee do something, but you don't say anything because you don't understand everything. Even Prabhupada, like Prabhupada was on the train, they're traveling through India, and they're taking prasad. And then, you know, before we serve prasad, you know, we wash our hands. Sometimes I'm sitting upstairs, someone, you know, guest, stands up, goes over to the servant and says, excuse me, don't touch, go and wash your hands. Or someone else can wash their hands, they can serve, don't touch. So they don't understand. So Prabhupada was there and the devotees are serving. So Prabhupada taking prasad, and the disciples, they're all taking prasad with Prabhupada in their carriage. And then Prabhupada said, give me some more sabji. So the devotee, you know, jump up to run out to go wash the hand. Prabhupada said, just serve. Well, I think he said left hand. So just grab left hand and just put it. So someone said, oh, Prabhupada, can we, you know, this is an offense. But, you know, if Prabhupada does that, it's okay. We don't do that. But Prabhupada does, you know, what's the problem? So we should not criticize. Sometimes you will see senior devotee do something, but that's not really our business. With that. We should just follow the senior devotee. Now, if there's some discrepancy is there, then okay, whatever that is. But don't become offensive, if that's the point. Then you don't go and say, oh, you know, I saw Guru Maharaj and he's, you know, took it off before he washed his hand and everything like that. And then, you know, just be very careful, that's the point. You know, senior devotee, then just be very careful. So Kali is like that. You know, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says he's offending Garuda, but he doesn't understand Garuda's position.
This time I was in India, one devotee told me that when Ramanujacharya came to Gangapuri, he saw the standard, the worship of standard by all the partners. They were sitting in the temple room with the power and everything. And they said, you know, this is Supreme Lord, you can't do this. And the next day, he went to the Puri king and complained and they were standing there. That night, Lord Jagannath came, Ramanujacharya came and he said that, just leave them alone, they can do whatever they want. And his bed was outside Puri. If the king got up, his bed was not in Puri, it's outside of Puri. He threw him out, Ramanujacharya himself.
Yeah, hundreds of kilometers away. I'd sent him. He threw him like that. And he landed, and then he landed like hundreds of kilometers away. There was another one as well where, who was it? It was one of Lord Chaitanya's associates. I don't know if it was Pundari Pichaniti. I can't remember who it was. It was one of his associates. He went to Puri. And the cloth they're offering to Jagannath. Yeah, the starch, like that. And he thought, this is not good. You know, so then that night in the dream, Jagannath was sitting on his chest and was slapping his face. Hey. Huh? Leave my servants alone. Huh? I like the starch. Huh? Yeah. And he wake up in the morning, he's all bruised. Like that. And even, you know, in Mayapur, Jnanivas Prabhu, so last year, same thing. Yeah, wake up in the morning, some bruise was there. The devotee said, oh, what happened? He said, oh, you know, Lord was.
He left painting in between, you know, he was painting Jagannath, and he left painting because some, yes, for preaching program or something, and Prabhupada came and said, how can you leave my brother like that, half painted?
And he fell down on the bed, which is only to this side. So he had a bruise and a cut, that's why 5 stitches.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Jnanivas Prabhu one time. He was telling us, you know, the Jagannath Mandir down in Mayapur? Yeah, the Rajpur Mandir. So then Jnanivas Prabhu said they got a Govardhan Shila, Giriraj Shila, like about that big. Like, so then they put him there. He wasn't there before. It was just Jagannath Balaram. But then they put him there. And then the pujari came to do the offering. And, you know, the bhoga. So he offered to Jagannath and to Giriraj, like, simultaneously, because they're same. You know, so. But then in the dream, Jagannath said to the pujari, he said, even before you ring the bell, then Giriraj starts taking all the... So they told Jaipataka Swami, and Jaipataka Swami said, okay, make 2 plates. One for Jagannath, one for Giriraj. Mm-hmm. And Jnanivas Prabhu, he's telling me this pastime, he's laughing. He's laughing his head off. He's just laughing. He said, Giriraj, just take everything. So we don't always understand who these devotees are. So you just serve them. Even I saw Jnanivas Prabhu in the Dhammadhar Ashtika time, he came down in front of the altar and they had a statue of Krishna on the altar, like on the lower part, lifting Govardhan Hill. And I saw he wasn't, you know, he must have been absorbed in some internal consciousness. And he started imitating Krishna. He started standing like Krishna. He was talking to Krishna, talking to the statue. And he was going like that. And he was, I couldn't hear what he was saying, but he was talking to him. Walked off. So, you know, we don't know what those kind of devotees, what their relationship is. Mm-hmm. They may have a very intimate relationship with Krishna. So it just says here, don't criticize, that's the point. Vishnu Chakravarti Sahaja Thakur just says, be very careful, because you don't know the mind, what's going on. Okay. Seeing how the unfortunate fish in that lake had become most unhappy at the death of their leader, Sobari uttered the following curse under the impression that he was mercifully acting for the benefit of the lake's residents. So, Meenakshi.
That when a so-called confession does not tend to the order of the Supreme Lord,
Hmm. So, any points there? So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that be very careful about being controlled by mundane compassion. Because sometimes we think, oh, I'm being compassionate. But because it's material, it just makes the situation worse, not better. So Sabari, he thought, I'm protecting the fish. So he thought, I'm being a very good person. I'm a good sage, a good rishi, a good muni. I'm looking after the fish. So it was mundane compassion. But then, so what did he do to protect the fish? Then he cursed Garuda. He said, hey, you can't come here anymore. He said, if you eat any of these fish, you will die. So he thought that he was doing the right thing. He thought he was being a good person. But factually speaking, he was offending Garuda. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, because his compassion was mundane, he just made everything worse. Because then Garuda couldn't come there anymore. So then who came there? Kaliya. And then what happened? All the fish died. Because there's so much poison in the river, no one could live. So he thought, oh, okay, I'm looking after one person, or I'm looking after the fish, but then he actually killed all the fish. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, don't cultivate mundane compassion. Cultivate spiritual compassion. Devotee is paradukha dukhi, which means his compassion is spiritual. We want to help. And Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada was in Hyderabad. And one aid worker from America, like Peace Corps, he came to visit Prabhupada. And he said to Prabhupada, he said, what is your definition of compassion? And Prabhupada said, what is your definition? That's how Prabhupada would preach. What is your definition? Prabhupada said, what is your definition? Right? He said, to feed the people. And Prabhupada said, your definition or your version of compassion is like blowing on the boil. Huh? If you want to cure the boil is very painful. He said, you take a lance and cut, and then you draw out the pus. Then you will help the person. You just blow on it. The Prabhupada said, you feed all the people, but next day everyone's hungry again. So what did you solve? No? If you actually want to help the people, you have to give them spiritual knowledge. So that is the definition of compassion. You know, just like all these aid work, you know, in this area there's a lot of aid work. They feed people, which is good, because Prabhupada said, hungry people cannot understand philosophy. You know, if I'm fasting since yesterday, I'm sitting here, I'm not listening. You know, I'm just like, I just want to eat. So hungry people, you can't preach to them. First feed them, prasad, then preach. But if you're just giving them mundane food, you're not doing anything really. I mean, it's good because you're feeding the people, but then next day they're hungry again and they didn't learn anything about Krishna. So the real compassion, Prabhupada says, is when you give them divya gyan, spiritual knowledge. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said, just be careful of mundane compassion. Because Sabari thought, I'm helping all the fish. He just made a big mess, that's all. And that's what's happening in the world. You know, they think they're helping everyone, but it's just a mess. Okay. So read text number 11. If Garuda ever again enters this lake and eats the fish here, he will immediately lose his life. What am I saying? What I am saying is the truth. You want to read the first paragraph?
The acharyas explain in this regard that because of Savari Muni's material attachment and affection for a fish, he failed to see the situation from the spiritual viewpoint. The ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describes his fall down for this offense. Because of false pride, Savari Muni lost his power of austerity and with it its spiritual beauty and happiness. When Garuda came to the Yamuna, Savari Muni thought, although he may be a personal associate of Supreme Lord, I'll still curse him and even kill him if he disobey my order. Such an offensive attitude against an exalted Vaishnava will certainly destroy one's auspicious position in life.
So what are the points in the first paragraph?
Even if you lost your birth and beauty and everything, you offend Vaishnava.
Everything is lost. So these are credits. They're like pious credits. They're the result of punya or sukriti. Or in devotional terms, you can say bhakti sukriti. If you do devotional service, you get benefit from your bhakti. But you can destroy it all. If you commit aparad, you destroy all of the at least the material things that you accumulate. It says, if you commit offenses to devotees, your duration of life, your wealth, your fame, your beauty, all these things, they become destroyed. And I've seen in my own life, I've seen people who have offended, I know people who have offended devotees, and because they offended the devotees, I saw everything deteriorate. Yeah, they had so much material facility and everything just went away. So this is the message here. Be very careful about offending. If you offend a devotee, if you're a devotee and you offend another devotee, Krishna blocks the account. Just like you go to the bank, you have all your money in the bank. But if you offend the bank, you know, you do something and the bank takes offense, and they just cut the account. Your money's there, but you can't touch it. So same as Vaishnava Aparad. If you offend devotees, your spiritual advancement is there, but you can't access it. You know, sometimes we do, we commit offense, and we lose our taste for chanting. You can chant and chant and chant. I know sometimes I read Prabhupada's books, you know, when I've committed offenses, and then I can read and read and read, but it's like nothing's coming out. There's no realization. And then it's the opposite. If you please the devotees, serve the devotees, then when you read, it's like everything just automatically manifests. Krishna gives it to you. So that is the choice you have to make. So if you serve the devotees, you get Krishna's mercy automatically. And if you offend the devotees, then Krishna severs the account. So then you can't access your realization, your advantage. And we see, I've seen in ISKCON, you know, advanced devotees, people who were disciples of Prabhupada, even gurus, but because of offenses, they fell down. Even though they're advanced, they're not junior, you know, they're advanced devotees, but they can't access until the offenses become clear, and then they can take it up again. So that's what the Bhagavatam was saying, be very careful. This pastime was in the 9th canto. Savari. So we already went over the pastime in detail, but this is like a retelling of the pastime, but from a different angle. Yeah. But the same point is that just be very, very, very careful. Vaishnava aparad, it ruins everything. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what does he call it? Hati Mata. So it means mad elephant. Yeah, mad elephant. So when Mahaprabhu himself, Krishna himself, says this is the elephant offense, mad elephant, because it gives the analogy of the bhakti lata. Bhakti lata means the creeper. So the elephant comes into your garden, right? Big problem. It's all wrecked. So he says it's like that. So if you offend the devotees, it's like, you know, all your work can be destroyed immediately, especially if it's an advanced devotee, and it's just very serious reactions. Any points? You want to read the second part now?
As the ninth kind of describes, Sovereign Muni married many beautiful men, such as breaking their association. But because he had once become glorious by taking shelter of the Yamuna River in Srivandam Dam, he was ultimately delivered.
So, any points there? So, it's been pointed out there we have to perform Dharam Seva. Dharam Seva means you have to serve the holy places. That was his good fortune, because he had served the Jamuna. So because there had been some service to Jamuna, or service to Vrindavan, or service to Mayapur, or service to Puri, Prabhupada said, Melbourne, he said, this temple is non-different from Vrindavan. So serving this temple, building that new kitchen, you know, you go to the fundraising dinner, and they say to you, how much are you going to give? And then you give, because you're in the room full of 300 people and three sannyasis. Very good tactic, actually. You get the sannyasis there. The sannyasis speak how nice it is to, and then they say, so how much are you going to give? Right? And then, you know, some guys says $10,000, then you think, oh my God, now I have to give something. So you're not going to give less than $1,000. Everyone's saying, oh, I'll give $5,000. And then they go home that night and they think, oh my God, it's like, how did this happen? So this is Dharam Seva. Because that is Radharani's kitchen, Prabhupada says. Says the kitchen is Radharani's kitchen. Radharani cooks the offering. Like my godbrother, Murari Chaitanya, you know him? Lives up in Brisbane, you know. He was head pujari here in Melbourne, long time. Right? He's advanced devotee. So he's a very good cook. Like very good cook. So I used to go sometimes, take prasad. You know, he'd cook Rajbhog, I'd take prasad. I'd say, how does it taste so nice? He said, Radharani cooks everything. Same as Jai Sachi, my other godbrother. Yeah, he's a very good cook. Yeah, sometimes you ask, you know, he cooks that Janmashtami. I mean, he's cooking for like 2,000 people. That evening one, the midnight one, the Ekadashi one, right? That's 2,000 people, I think, something like that. It's not easy to cook. 2,000 people, that's like, you know, and get this.
It's a miracle from our work with him every Janmashtami. I still can't get it how he does it. It's really a miracle. Really a miracle. And he cooks it till like 10 in the night, and he's there for Prabhupada, following day's Prabhupada appearance here, right? He comes for that art, and still he goes and cooks. Like, can't be there before 8 o'clock, but he's there starting to cook already.
In the morning.
He's got so much energy for those 2 days.
Yeah, so I've asked him several times, I said, how do you do it? He said Radharani does it. He says that. And if you go to Vrindavan, there is the cook, he cooks Radhashama Sundara's offerings, Bhubaneshwar. So if you go there, he cooks. If you go into the Didi kitchen, he's cooking. And you ask him, you say, how does it cook? So he gave me prasad. I went there, I gave some ghee for the deities. And he said, he gave me some maha prasad, puri and sabji from the morning offering. I tasted it, it was like amazing, like transcendental taste. And then I've heard, you know, devotee said, hey, how does it taste so good? And he said, I am the spoon. He said, Radharani cooks, but I am the spoon. So these devotees, they have these kind of, this attitude or these realizations. That's how it all takes place. So you do Dharam Seva, you support this temple, you know, building that kitchen, supporting the temple, then that is Dharam Seva. That is the same as serving Jamuna, serving Vrindavan, serving Mayapur. Because Prabhupada said this is Vrindavan. It's not different to Vrindavan, it is Vrindavan. So if you do the Seva here, you get the same benefit. So that is Sabari's. That's why he got out of his situation. He offended Garuda, but then he got out of it in the end because there was some service to the Jamuna. So later on, after all the mess and everything, got cleared up again. Any points? Okay. Verse number 12. We're on 12, are we? Okay. Oh, okay, there's one more point for the previous verse, verse 11. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that if you get bad association, it clouds your consciousness. So somehow Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes the point, Sabari was under the water, but he became friends with a fish, but the fish weren't devotees. And because of material association, asatsanga, tyag, Vaishnav Acharya, our Lord Chaitanya says, give up the association. So he was under there, but because he's associating with non-devotees, his consciousness became contaminated. And then he offended Garuda. Huh? So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, this also happens to us. If you associate with non-devotees, even though you're a devotee, but you associate too much with the non-devotees, you'll start to criticize the devotees. And we see that happens. You know, people, devotees, stop associating with the devotees, associate with the non-devotees, too much with your family or your whatever, non-devotees. And then you start criticizing the devotees because they criticize. And then you begin to criticize, and then that's a problem. So Sabari became friend with the fish. But the fish, they were criticizing Garuda, the devotee. And they said, oh, he comes and eats everyone. So Sabari said, yeah, hey, who are you? Hey, I curse you. Committee threw a curse on Garuda. Garuda was so powerful, he could have just thrown the curse away. But he accepted the curse. But that was, it was an offense. Krishna did not like that. And then Sabari fell down, goes off, gets married to 50 princesses, has 500 children. From each, so 500 kids, yeah. So then, you know, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said he suffered a lot like that. You know, one wife's enough to, you know, give you a headache, and one husband's enough to give you a headache. So just one's enough, but then, you know, 500. Prabhupada said, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he said he suffered in Grihastha life. You know, he went off and had all the kids and everything, but then he just suffered so much. And then finally he came back. Later on it all cleared up when the offense had gone, then he took it up again. Okay. One more verse. Of all the serpents, only Kaliya came to know of this affair, and in fear of Garuda, he took up residence in that Jamuna lake. Later, Lord Krishna drove him out. So why do we not want to commit offenses towards the devotees? Who gets upset? Krishna. And if there's one person in creation you don't want to upset, it is Krishna. Because when he's not happy, everything becomes very unpleasant. When he's happy, everything becomes very easy. It says that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that if you remember Lord Chaitanya, everything becomes easy. And if you forget him, everything becomes difficult. Even the most easy things, they become difficult, and the most difficult things become easy. So you see that if you offend Krishna, your life just becomes problematic. And if you keep Krishna happy, if you please him by serving his devotees and treating the devotees. So basically, the point is there. If you please the devotees, Krishna's happy. You know Krishna's happy if the devotees are pleased. And if the devotees are not pleased with you, you know Krishna's not happy. So, any points?
Thousands of things together on Krishna himself. So it's so much pain that we are.
So be careful. Any other point? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.